Hi friends, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo, welcome. We have another short letter from Nichiren to a lay monk in a region. Now this is from Minobu again, this is later in Nichiren's life. And we're reading a lot of letters lately to individual practitioners, men and women. This one is to Nichimyo, I believe. Anyway, he's a lay monk, and therefore he has people that he is promulgating Nichiren's doctrine of the Lotus Sutra. And so these people will write, in this case, this is an answer, a response, as all of these letters generally are, unless they're a specific teaching or a higher level letter to be distributed amongst followers, or letters to authorities, rulers, landowners, the government, so on and so forth, or treatises on Buddhism and the Lotus Sutra in general, right? So we have all these kinds of letters from Nichiren. This is another personal letter, but even though it's a personal letter, it's always in the context of spreading the teachings of Myoho Renge Kyo, the Lotus Sutra, right? In this case, I've mentioned several times so far that Japan is in a lot of turmoil, both whether it's earthquakes or famine or health or so on, civil war. At this point, there's a lot of trouble with the Mongols. Kublai Khan is really spreading his empire, and he wants this island of Japan. So, Mongol envoys come and they demand things, and then there, in this particular case, Nichimyo, I keep saying Nichimyo, I want to make sure that that's correct. What is his name? He wrote a letter, Nishiyama. So sorry, Nishiyama. He wrote a letter to Nichiren, just reporting what's going on in his town, asking advice, I'm sure. And so this is Nichiren's response. And I guess what I want to say is when Nichiren responds to these letters from people, he responds to allay them, their fears or their ideas or their questions personally, but also in a way that enables them to spread that teaching or news or answer to their respective either followers or just their sangha, all right, their extended Buddhist family, if you will. And just a note on that, you know, we take for granted these days that we have information portals all over the place. I mean, it's redundant to say that we have cell phones or smartphones that keep us in touch with things that normally we would never even know about in our world, right? But even go back before smartphones, if you're that old, that experienced, maybe I should say, when we got our news from television or radio. Newsmen and women were celebrity status because they brought us information that we couldn't be exposed to any other way. And it wasn't just information about outside our borders. In fact, it's a lament that the news is generally confined to our own nation, if not our own region, right? And that's a lament because the more we know about the broader world and the more exposure we have to different cultural realities, the more it enriches our lives and our own perspective on our own lives, right? So there's a limitation. But then again, you can lament that, but think before television and radio, how did you get your news? How did you know about what was going on in the world? the world was, in many ways, much smaller then. I mean, the earth was always the same size, but our awareness of the world was very limited to our own region. If you live in Mississippi, for instance, what goes on in New York or Chicago or Florida or Tennessee, for that matter, is very much obfuscated from you, right? Same for anywhere. And so what I mean to point out here is that if you go, you don't have to go back very far, generationally or in years, to see that news is basically gossip and rumors. You really relied on the human gift for blab to find out what was going on in your area, and you had to depend on, in other words, trust the information that it wasn't colored either by your own ears or by the person from whom you were getting the information. So this reportage was always a critical aspect of security, identity, right? Our human experience. So Nitrin, for his endeavors, was very reliant on communications in letters to more directly experience what somebody was saying to him. In other words, it wasn't just word of mouth, but it was documented, which, we're still reading today. Look at the gift that it is for our experience of not only Buddhism, but life itself, right? So this documentation, these letters back and forth, were the source of information for people. They had no other avenues. All right. So you have to understand that with that onus on these communications, a lot was attempted to be accomplished. They weren't just casual, "Hey, how's it going?" "Oh, pretty good, take it easy." They weren't just casual missives, right? They were opportunities to get the most communication, the most can I say the widest breadth of knowledge conveyed one to another, right? So when Nishiyama wrote a letter to Nichiren, or anyone who wrote a letter to Nichiren, they would say, "Thank you very much, and thank you for everything. Here's what's going on in my area. How should I deal with this? How should I tell my family? How should others do? This is what I know of what's going on in my area. Can you give me advice, or could you tell me what's going on in the broader area, because I'm not hearing anything?" I mean, these communications were very, very important. And don't forget that all of them were delivered by an as not an assembly, but generally with more than one messenger, because traveling through the country was quite an ordeal as well. So you would have these groups. The word escapes me right now. What do you call these envoys and these groups? So you would have this delivery of multiple letters, as well as a face-to-face report from the journey these people had, and their kind of survey of everything they went through to get there. So these face-to-face and these letters were the mode of knowing what the heck was going on, and education and sharing knowledge and so forth. So this letter is about the Mongol envoys. So we'll get into it here, but of course Nietzsche is going to take the opportunity not only to comment on what Nishiyama has told him, but how all of this relates to Myoho Rengekyo, which will help Nishiyama and his family, and by extension, the Sangha that he is a part of, right? Okay, so here we go. I can hardly express my joy at learning of your safe return from Kamakura. And I have received your news about the beheading of the Mongol envoys. It is indeed a pity that while the monks of the Nembutsu, the true word, Zen and precept schools, who are the enemies of our country, did not have their heads cut off. The innocent Mongol envoys have been beheaded. So, I laugh because every time I read something like this, I'm reminded of, the old saw that all Buddhists are pacifist vegetarians. And here is Nietzsche saying, they should have their heads cut off. That doesn't sound like a pacifist, does it? But anyway, mythologies are what they are, right? So, he goes on to say, well, just so you know, the Mongols sent envoys to Kamakura, where Nishiyama was stationed, his tour within the Kamakura shogunate and government. And obviously, Nichiren is glad that he's back home with his family in Sangha and didn't get murdered or killed while he was in Kamakura because all this exchange of civil war and Mongol invasion and so forth. So the Mongols sent these, I don't know, four or five envoys to deliver the news to the shogunate that we expect you to pay homage to the emperor of the Mongol Empire, right? And the shogunate responded by beheading them. The old adage, don't kill the messenger. Well, they used to kill the messengers. That was their response. I guess relying again on that network of rumors and gossip to get back to the empire, right? So let's go on. Those who are unaware of the particulars of the matter will no doubt think that I say this out of conceit because my prophecy has been fulfilled. Some 15 years earlier, Nichiren had remonstrated with the shogunate and said, if you don't change your ways and adopt proper mental attitude of myoho renge kyo in your governance of the country, you're going to bring about the defeat of Japan by foreign invaders. And so this is what Nichiren is mentioning, is his people think I'm full of myself with the I told you so kind of thing, right? Yet during this period of more than 20 years, he continues, this is what I've been privately lamenting about day and night to my disciples, and what I've publicly declared time and again. So here it is, it's happening, right? Among all grave matters, the ruin of the nation is gravest. The Sovereign King's Sutra states, quote, among all disasters, nothing surpasses the extreme gravity of losing the nation's sovereign status, right? It shakes everyone's constitution, right? This passage means that among all negative influences or evils, the worst is to become ruler, govern wrongfully, and have one's nation defeated by a foreign land. There's the I told you so again. The Golden Light Sutra also states, quote, because evil people are respected and favored, and good people are subjected to punishment, marauders will appear from other regions, and the people of the country will meet with death and disorder. End quote. This passage, he says, means that when a person becomes the ruler of a state and values evil people while attracting blame to good ones, attaching blame to good ones, that country will surely be defeated by another land. The fifth volume of the Lotus Sutra states, quote, they will be respected and revered by the world as though they were arhats who possessed the six transcendental powers, end quote. While explaining the appearance of the enemies of the Lotus Sutra, this passage is saying that the ruler of the country will revere those who firmly uphold the 250 precepts and who appear to be like Mahakasyapa and Shariputra, and will attempt to destroy the votary of the Lotus Sutra. So, these are teachings we've heard before. Obviously, Nichiren is reminding Nishiyama that, you know, this, we know why this is happening, right? Ah, excuse me, dry mouth again. So as I said before, it's a teaching moment, right? He continues. Now, what is known as a teaching of importance is nothing special. One who can, in accordance with the time, discern without the slightest error what is important both for oneself and for the country is a person of wisdom. The Buddha is called worthy of respect because he ponders the past and knows the future. Nothing surpasses the wisdom of knowing the three existences. Although they were not Buddhas, because sages and worthies such as Nagarjuna, Vasubandhu, Tendai, and Dengyo, though not nearly to the same degree as the Buddha, generally understood the affairs of the three existences, their names have been passed on into the future. Ultimately, all phenomena are contained within one's life, down to the last particle of dust. The nine mountains and the eight seas are encompassed in one's body, and the sun and moon and myriad stars are found in one's life. We, however, are like a blind person who is incapable of seeing the images reflected in a mirror, or like an infant who has no fear of fire or water. The teachings, such as those of the non-Buddhist writings, and those of the Hinayana and provisional Mahayana Buddhist scriptures, all partially explain the phenomena inherent in one's life. They do not explain them as the Lotus Sutra does. Thus, among the sutras, there are both superior and inferior, and among people also, sages and worthies may be distinguished. Since there is too much to go into concerning the teachings, I will stop here. I deeply appreciate your sending a messenger so quickly after your return from Kamakura, and in addition, you sent me various offerings, which I am very glad to have received. While all the people in Japan lament, I, Nichiren, and my followers rejoice amid the grieving. Since we live in this country, we cannot possibly escape an attack from the Mongol forces. But because the heavenly deities know that we have been persecuted for the sake of our country, we can rejoice that we will surely be saved in our next life. Moreover, you have become indebted to the Mongol Empire in your present life. Had this situation not arisen, as this year marks the 13th anniversary of the death of the lay monk of Saimyo-ji, the commemorative hunt would no doubt have been held on your estate, and you would be in Chukushi like Lord Hojo Rokuro. This runs contrary to the wishes of you and your clan. You are not being punished by others. From another point of view, could it not be that you have been saved due to the protection of the Lotus Sutra? Yours is a serious misunderstanding. Though so joyful a thing as this has occurred, and though I would have to like to go and congratulate you in person, others would hear of it and think it strange, so I have refrained. I responded immediately, Nichiren. So, this event of killing all the envoys was evidently quite a message, taunting really an invasion from the Mongol Empire. And so this is what the exchange is about, is Nishiyama is evidently quite worried. He managed to get out of Kamakura after it happened. He's back home now, but now they're all very nervous about the consequences of this event. So we kind of have to read through this letter and understand what the situation is. But once again, as I said before, Nichiren uses the opportunity to remind them that all of these things are not of no surprise, really, in light of our Buddha wisdom and our understanding the nature of life itself. All actions are all they never go unanswered. There's always a consequence to our actions. So, running the country as the shogunate is in a very authoritarian manner brings with it a response from the universe, as it were. And the universe as an immediately experienced thing, right? So, again, encouragement for practice to somebody who Nichiren knows is a student of the Lotus Sutra, a reminder and an encouragement. And in the last paragraph or so, Nichiren reminds him that, hey, you're involved with people who are making terrible causes. Obviously, he's being called to Kamakura because he is a samurai and a leader. And when Nichiren says you and your clan is a specific word. It's not family that he's talking about. He's talking about his warriors that work beneath him, right? So, even so, as a samurai, he's also a Buddhist and he follows Nichiren. Again, that complexity of philosophy, religion, and governance, they're all very, very much intermingled it's not medieval, but anyway, 13th century Japan, right? The shogun government. So, Nichiren is trying to be encouraging and saying, look, even though you're involved with the entity that's making these negative causes, bringing about all of this retribution of sorts, the effects of that cause making, you're also being protected. The fact that you're not in Kamakura right now is evidence. So don't forget, it's not that it's easy for someone practicing Buddhism to see the events of their lives as nervous as it makes you. The Mongols are going to come and invade now. Well, my practice isn't working. Blame the practice, right? Well, I chant all the time and things are not happening and things are getting worse. But it's very easy to forget that these things are bigger than just our actions alone, and our situation within those actions. We forget to see how we're protected from a lot of the effects and the consequences is the word I'm looking for of these actions, whether or not we're intimately involved with the action making, if you will. So it's important to stay committed, to resolve, 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 resolve. This is always the message, right? Okay, so that is the end of this Gosho. The next one, let's see what's coming up next here. On curing karmic disease. So we're kind of on a theme here. Anyway, that will be an interesting Gosho. And for now, again, I have to remind you how much I appreciate your participation in these videos. Support if you can. Listen to the podcast. You can download them, listen to them whenever you want. Namu myoho renge kyo. Please take good care of your health and your loved ones. And keep your practice strong. It will buoy you through anything. I promise. All right. See you next time.